movies and booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. More for you.
As always, at this time of the week, the best part of the week, movies and booze. I'm delighted to say we're welcomed by Esther McCarthy. Hello, Esther.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
How are you, indeed? We also have Jean Smullen. Jean, how are you?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
And finally, Tomás Clancy. Tomás, how are you?
Good afternoon. Not too bad, Tom. Not too bad.
The dream team back together again.
That's it.
Remotely.
Four.
Tom and I are the only two who have wine.
Yeah, I could have worked. I would have been drinking something different to you, but and that may still happen. I wouldn't rule it out. But God, it's strange times, so you have to expect a bit of a strange show to go with it. I'll be asking you all about the stuff you have for us in a moment, but just I want to go through some of the texts that were coming in. We were talking about baking, and one listener is saying, I'm sick to the back teeth of all the gloaty bakers. It's not the radio, it's the work of WhatsApp groups or Instagram. You baked, I didn't, I don't want to, and that's okay for me. Wind it in, bake gloaters, and spare us your demands for rounds of applause for your hipstery homemaking. That's from a disgruntled cabin fever. Claire, get it off of your chest, Claire. You're right. Tell people how you feel. To that baker hater, let's not turn on one another. Yes, there may be some flour wasted during this time, but let's just accept it and let people bake, please. Other things you're doing at home. The kids have gone bake. Oh, it's baking still. The kids have gone bake crazy while the parents work from home. Muffins, profiteroles, lemon meringue pie. So we're all piling on the pounds. At Battenberg is today's treat. Well done to Karen, who's missing her sixth class friends. And thanks from Maloney's in Offaly. And people saying, can I repeat the name of the Corona book? Yep, it's called Coronavirus, a Book for Children. The hashtag today is Pudgy Movies, and that's from Henry McCain's Thursday report on how fat people are feeling after a month of fridge grazing, and some of them already. Life of Pies, The Breakfast Chub, Gulp Edition, and Hot Tubby Time Machine. Good luck with them. Keep them coming. Right then, Jean, tell me briefly, what is it you're going to be looking at today?
Okay, and actually, I mean, flour is the new toilet paper. You cannot get flour. I'm not a baker, but it's all about, it's all menu envy and bottle brag. That's all that's on social media. People putting up what they're drinking and what they're eating. Luckily, I have some flour here, which I occasionally use, but I was just looking for some flour just in case I might take up baking. And there isn't any anywhere to be had. So flour is the new toilet paper. Anyway, moving swiftly along. Today, because obviously it's Easter, I'm going to look at a couple of wines that'll go well, the sort of food people will be eating this Easter. Both are exclusive to Lidl. I have a lovely Pinot Gris from Gisborne in North Island in New Zealand, which is one of the new exclusive wines, one of the new core wines from the Lidl range. And then I'm going to have a lovely Saint-Emilion Grand Cru from 2017, which wasn't a fabulous year. There was a lot of frost. It wasn't great, but this actually, some of the producers had some really good wines that year in Saint-Emilion, which is in on the right bank of the Gironde River in Bordeaux. And this one is actually very, very drinkable and really good value and perfect to go with roast lamb.
Beautiful. I look forward to hearing about them in a moment or two. Esther, you must be in a somewhat strange position because obviously cinemas are closed and I presume the main releases are all being put back. So what have you got for us today?
Yeah, I'm guessing the likes of the people who run Netflix must be rolling their eyes at us sniffy critics who said it'll never replicate the theatrical experience, because here's every film critic in the world is now relying on the streaming giants really to keep the show on the road. So what you have this week is a brand new to Netflix. It's Love, Wedding, Repeat. It's a British comedy in which a bungling leading man tries to find love at a wedding, which is his sister's marriage, actually. So far, so four weddings and a funeral. And then we've also got, this is an interesting one. We've had some independent movies go straight to digital, given that the cinemas have been closed for the last month now, and they would have had, you know, their campaigns up and running and their advertising paid for. But this is the first really big studio film, I suppose, Universal's Trolls World Tour, to go direct to stream. So this would have been planned as the big kids family movie for the Easter break. But instead, you're going to have an opportunity to watch it at home.
Well, that looks like an opportunity that I will definitely get to enjoy. It'd be very hard to avoid that. And Tomás, before we start, you have some wines for us today as well?
We have some wines. We're desperately trying to avoid thinking about Easter or anything related to reality or life. So we're trying to think about where can we go and explore for our wines this week. And we're thinking about northern Spain. And we're thinking about, firstly, over to Rioja up in the mountains near the Basque country, and then over towards, and probably for our first wine, Terras Gouda, which is in Albariño, which is in Rías Baixas. It's an Albariño from Rías Baixas, so it's up in the left-hand side, the western side of Spain, which a lot of people who I think have never been to Donegal keep saying it's Spain's Donegal. They have no idea what Donegal's like, or they have no idea what Western Spain is like. It's a very strange thing to suggest. It is the northwest of the country, so I mean, on that frame, it does fit it. But it is, you can die of heatstroke during the summer. It is full of sparkling rivers leading up to sacred valleys where the Romans spent 2,000 years ago, an absolute eternity digging gold out of the ground and making it one of the richest sort of places to be sent. And it was a real destination to actually be sent there. So someone like Pliny the Elder gets sent there as a mark of respect to govern the place for a while. So I suppose that could we could egg on some people from Donegal in their displeasure of our comparing of the two regions. And so those are the two wines. We've got a nice Rioja and a very, very beautiful Albariño, one of the new kind, one of the kind that are more full bodied and really feel like a lovely Chablis, but for half the price.
Which sounds great. I have questions for you all before we kick off into our first wine. And Esther, I'm going to drag you into this now because immediately there's a reaction on the Trolls World Tour. A listener asking, did I read right that James Corden is in these Trolls movies? Why is he in everything? He is like the virus itself.
He is. Yeah, he pops up in everything now. I think Hollywood just likes that, the English accent, you know. They have a soft spot for the Irish accent as well, of course, over the years. But yes, fewer movies with James Corden in them, please. I would totally agree with that.
You wonder where he gets the time, don't you? He really does, apart from his career, you know, on TV. He seems to be in everything. And maybe a question for you, Tomás. Can you suggest a nice spicy wine? Because of the lockdown, wine just isn't having the same impact anymore. So I thought maybe a spicy wine might kick my taste buds back into gear.
Well, I think both Gina and myself would definitely say there's spicy wines everywhere. I mean, Grenache from Spain, Garnacha from Spain, Grenache from southern France, you are just filled with spicy wines. If you look in the Rhone Valley as well, so Châteauneuf-du-Pape, Corbière from the Languedoc, or Vacquerès or Gigondas, and there really are quite a lot of very good ones out there, and you can find them at the Côte du Rhône pricing, kind of like 12 to 15 to 16 euros, and right up to Châteauneuf, which is kind of your sort of 30 to 90 euros. That will certainly spice up your life.
Châteauneuf-du-Pape, one I haven't heard mentioned in a long time. Esther, another question for you. Have you seen the cut of Cats where they didn't remove the cat bum holes? I saw people tweeting about this and I couldn't believe what I was reading.
I have heard about it. I haven't been brave enough to look at that cut yet. I think I'm still traumatised after looking at the original film. But apparently there were bits of anatomy digitally removed at the post-production stage, and they were removed with good reason.
Wow, my God, what a thought. And Esther, before we go to your first wine, people are talking about the downside of all this sitting on the couch and drinking wine. And a question that's going around is, is all wine heavy in calories? I'm wondering, is my weight going down to my food or my wine intake, asks a listener.
Well, the thing about wine, yes, that wine is, you know, basically there's sugar in wine to all intents and purposes. So if you have a low alcohol wine, something from Germany, say, that's about 8% alcohol by volume, or even there's a lot of now low alcohol wines that are deliberately made that way at 5.5% alcohol by volume. And that's very much a big trend in terms of what you can buy in the shops these days. they tend to have what would be in the old days a Weight Watchers 1 point. Anybody who's been on a diet in Weight Watchers would know what that means. But in other words, they have less sugar. So, you know, the drier the wine style, the less sugar that's in it. For example, if you drink spirits, there's no sugar in spirits, but, you know, too much of it is very good for you. But, yeah, I mean, this is the thing. Everybody's talking about the COVID to stone. And I mean, it's going to so yes. easily happen to everybody, you know. there's no doubt about it. And, yeah. You know, when it comes to diets, I could write the book and tear them up and write them again. But yeah, there are calories, you know, think, you know, about 90 to 120 calories in a glass of wine, depending on what style it is and how much sweetness there is in it, you know. And there are some wines that do have lots of residual sugar in them, and some of them can have up to 13 grams of sugar in them, so you have to be really careful. They're the ones that taste like lemonade and go down like a dream, you know. The next thing you finish the bottle and you're wondering why, you know, or how fast that happened. And they're the ones that are going to pile on the pounds. All right.
They're going to roll us out of this place when we get to the end of this lockdown. So, Jean, we'll stick with you. You're going to tell us about your first wine.
Sure. Okay, the first wine I have is the 2019 Pinot Gris from Gisborne. So this is my first wine of the new season, so hot off the presses. This is from New Zealand. Gisborne is, you'll find Gisborne on the East Cape of New Zealand's North Island. It's their third largest wine region. It's also one of the sunniest wine regions in New Zealand, and it's usually one of the first regions to start harvesting. A lot of the vineyards are planted quite near to the sea. So that means the vineyards are influenced by sea breezes, which cools down the temperature. So the region is better known for white grape production rather than red grape production. So here they're best known for Chardonnay, and they produce some lovely Chardonnay, Viognier, Gewurz, Traminer, Chenin Blanc, Semillon, and of course, Pinot Gris. Now, this is a very drinkable white wine, and it's brand new to the Lidl Core range. It's got lots of ripe tropical fruits. Now, even though it says Pinot Gris, I have a feeling there might even be a bit of Chardonnay or even some Gewurz Traminer in there, because there's a nice sweetness to it that kind of just lifts it. But there is a nice acidity as well. The wine also has a slight pink tinge, just a hint. Now, that would be because the parent grape, Pinot Gris was originally a red grape. Well, that kind of mutated over time. And true Pinot Gris, Alsace is the home where you'll find is where the grape is native to. There's a pink tinge on the skin. And when they crush those grapes, that pink tinge carries in. And you'll sometimes see it in good quality Pinot Gris, that lovely pink color. It's only a tiny hint, but you can see it. The wine tends to have, this one has lovely tropical fruit flavors, peach, lovely peach and a touch of melon. And spicy. There's a little bit of ginger spice in there. So if you're looking for a white wine with spice, that's one to look for. This is a medium body Pinot Gris. It's got a nice weight showing through. In other words, there's a nice oily sort of weighty texture to it when you drink it. You know, this would be great as an aperitif wine. I was going to say if you're having the family over, but none of us are doing that.
No.
But you could have a glass. What we're doing is we're going to have a family meet on. Everyone's going to put their laptops on. We're going to Google Meet. We're going to have a family meet that way. We all hoping to have a glass of wine together. So this would
That's
be a nice
idea.
One to have with that. And, you know, and actually for white wine drinkers who want to match it with meat, this would actually go with spring lamb as well, because it's got a nice enough weight and texture to make it go with that kind of slightly oily, soft texture you get from lamb. So $8.99, exclusive to Lidl.
$8.99.
It's just their Pinot Gris from Gisborne, and lovely.
Great. That's our first wine of the day. We're going to have a quick break, and we're going to have our first movie of the day. But I'll give you a few more pudgy movies before we go. The hashtag No Time to Diet, The Hateful Eight, The Dark Chocolate Night, In the Name of the Fatter. That's the winner for me so far. And Requiem for an Ice Cream. Lovely stuff. Keep them coming. Our first movie is coming up after this.
Oh my God, Hayley Cakes. You're absolutely amazing.
Thanks, Brian. Everything okay? You know your role? You're all right?
Yeah, I'm great.
Yeah.
Couple of questions, though. Can we stop calling it Maid of Honour and call it Man of Honour instead?
No. Second question?
Only because I'm a man, obviously. But secondly, am I sitting next to Vitelli?
No.
Okay. Why not? I mean, you know, he's casting for a new film right now. Do you have any idea what that could do for my career?
Give you one?
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
I had to put all the English people on the same table, but don't worry, I will introduce you, I promise.
All right, sorry, it's your day anyway, sorry. As long as I'm not sitting next to Rebecca, because I can't handle her holding on to me all night. Shut up.
A little bit of a clip there from our first movie, and Esther can shine a light on it now, tell us all about it. Esther, what's going on there?
Yeah, that is the wedding of the sister of Sam Claflin's character, and he's kind of tasked with making sure it all goes smoothly. So it's set in Italy. She's marrying an Italian man, but the British, it's set around the gathering of the eclectic, I would describe them as, British contingent at the wedding. So you get to meet lots of various different characters. But one of the interesting storylines, and this is quite actually, for a romantic comedy, it's quite crude. I can't repeat the opening line on daytime radio, but from the opening line, you get the sense here that they're trying to go for something a little bit edgier, a little bit naughtier. And the fact that the opening of the film is narrated by someone who's not only saying rude things, but who sounds remarkably like Judi Dench, shows you they're trying to kind of upend the whole rom-com a little. Narrator isn't credited, so I don't know if it is Judi Dench or not, but it sounds remarkably like her if it isn't. So it opens then with Jack, who's Sam Claflin's character. He's moving in for a first kiss with his potential soulmate, who he's met in while over to see his sister. She's an American war journalist by the name of Nina. But he kind of gets rudely interrupted by an old acquaintance who offers to give him a spin to the airport, which is where he's headed. So he kind of regrets that move right up until 3 years later, where we're at the wedding of his sister and her friend, of course, it's Hayley, who's played by Eleanor Tomlinson. So there's a lot of water under the bridge in the 3 years, as you can imagine. He's been in another relationship with a character played by Frida Pinto, which ended really acrimoniously, so he's kind of not too delighted to hear that she's going to be sitting at the same table as him. Whereas the American character Dina as well has been involved in a real-life kidnap drama in her work and also lost her mother. So there's lots of stuff going on. But the wedding, of course, looks set to be a dramatic one for all the wrong reasons, because the ex-girlfriend's there. She's now dating a character by the name of Chaz, and our own Aisling Bia pops up as well as a kind of straight token Irish character who lands herself in it when she meets Frida Pinto's character and says, "Are you still going out? I'm glad," she says, "have you met my new boyfriend?" And she said, "I'm glad you're not going out with that loser Chaz that you told me." And of course the guy there is Chaz. So it's kind of, you know, very much in familiar terrain here. English comedy of manners, a little bit of a farcical elements to it, which I quite enjoyed. It kind of gets a bit more outlandish then, because there's an old acquaintance of the bride, who's played by Jack Farthing, who's decided he's in love with her and shows up uninvited at the wedding, coked out of his head. And taking some Dutch courage as well. And he's intent on declaring his love for the bride and sabotaging the entire wedding. So there's a lot of story going on, as you can hear. But what Love Wedding Repeat offers, I suppose, that's really different, is it's kind of doing the sliding doors thing. It's, you know, the opening half of the movie is how everything that could go wrong does go wrong. And it's based around the idea of chance, and of, you know, something happening 20 years earlier dictating the entire course of your life. So, you know, as the title suggests and as the trailer suggests, it's basically giving you the same, a similar scenario in the second hour of the film. We're going back to the wedding, back to the start of the day to see if Jack can right all the wrongs that have gone on during the course of the day.
Okay.
A lovely device, really original idea that unfortunately kind of falls apart though in the execution. It just doesn't quite work, I suppose you're watching it going, oh, this is new. I wonder why more people don't do that. And then in the last hour, you find out why. It just starts to all get away. It all starts to all unravel pretty badly. And the characters do feel like types as well. They feel like kind of, they never feel like fleshed out people that you can really invest in, which I think is absolutely crucial for a rom-com, you know. And I think why someone like Nora Ephron is so adored, you know, you're willing people in her films to get together and sort out their differences. Whereas these just felt like types. It did feel like kind of a Richard Curtis, you know, I'm not going to say ripped off because that's not fair. Because anyway, Curtis has been ripping off his own films for years. So
it comes to mind, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Directed by a guy called Dean Craig, who's his directorial debut. And I think it's a challenging film to debut because the editing work that must have been involved in this must have been massive. But he does have a kind of a previous when it comes to kind of dark humor in his comedies, because he wrote Death at a Funeral, the Neil LaBouche film or story that was directed by Frank Oz, the great Frank Oz, about 10, 15 years ago. So that's kind of his pedigree. It's based on a French film called Plan du Table, and the French are great at their farces. So I think that's what they were trying to kind of milk here, that kind of over the top.
That's a hard thing to pull off, isn't it?
It's a hard thing to pull off. I suppose it's okay. You know, it doesn't quite work. It's worked, you know, if there was something like a global pandemic and you'd literally watched all of Netflix and you're looking for something to watch tonight, it'll pass an hour and a half nicely enough. And there are some nice performances.
That's really the key question, I think.
Yeah, yeah. More, I just think more could have been delivered on the premise here. It kind of feels like a bit of a missed opportunity for me.
Okay. Listeners asking, with the cinemas closed, what will happen to movies that end up having to go straight to streaming? Will they still qualify for the Oscars? Good question.
That's a great question. Well, the good news is, in terms of award season, is you need to screen. I think it's like you need to have a small release in Los Angeles and New York before Christmas. So what happens often is they release small just before Christmas, then roll big releases out, as we know.
Of course.
January, February, we're spoilt when it comes to movies here and new releases. So what happens generally now is it's all kind of rear-ended towards the end of the year. So the Oscar-winning movies don't get released midsummer in the States or in this part of the world. You know, you're getting the big family films and the big blockbusters. Yeah, I don't think so. Hopefully, we won't be still in that position at Christmas. Yeah.
Oh, please, yeah. Esther, thank you very much for that. I have two wine questions. I don't know whether Esther or Tomas would like to take this one. Is there such a thing as a Canarian wine, i.e. from Tenerife? Sorry, Jean or Tomas, which one would you like to have a go at that?
I think we'd both be happy to say that it's a great place to look for good wine, and that they are making some fantastic volcanic, very lively wines using the special soils that's there. They are, you know, they're magnificent. There's Seven Fuentes, the Seven Sales wine we were talking about, I think last week on the show, is one of these Canarian wines that produces a fantastic, very earthy wine from Liston Noir, but they also have Liston Bianco as well. So they have these two strange kind of rarefied wines from the sort of 15th, 16th century that got trapped out there when people were using the Canaries as a stop-off to head to South America. So there is interesting wine out there. And if you look at most of the, if you're out there, you'll find that most of the restaurants and hotels have kind of links to their nearest and dearest, nearest and local sort of winery. But I think you'd agree with me, Jean, it's a rising star.
Absolutely. And the Spanish commercial office, who do a lot of promotion of Spanish wine, they actually, about a year or two ago, they had some of the producers over from the Canaries giving a masterclass about their wines, and they were really great. I mean, you know, again, great varieties nobody's ever heard of, but yeah, definitely worth trying. We won't see them as much on our market, but if you're going over there, whenever life goes back to normal, it's worth checking them out.
Very good. Tomas, we're going to go to your first wine now. What is it going to be?
Terras Gouda, Albariño, and it's from the Orozal Valley. part of Rías Baixas. Rías Baixas is the region. It's in Galicia, which is up on the left-hand side, the high left-hand side or the high western side of Spain. It's pretty extraordinarily interesting kind of region. The Minho River forms the essentially the dividing line between Portugal and then the northern little tip of it, which Spain has captured for itself many hundreds of years ago. So that Portugal, they often, and previously, you know, there were many conflicts over this, would have liked to have perhaps gone the whole way up and had the whole outside. But in order to have an Atlantic coast that was relatively easy and away from the French, the Spanish kept that fight going. And so from basically from Santiago de Compostela and then north up to the corner is Spain. And this is where you get these fantastic wines like this one here. So Terras Guarda, it's an Albariño. It's €24.95. And you'll get it in independent wine shops like the Corkscrew or Whelan's Wines or all over the country that are independent wine shops. I think Donnybrook Fair as well have it too. It's interesting in that it's very different from the wines that you'll see under the heading Albariño. Albariño has really taken over as a white wine from Pinot Grigio in Italy and from Gruner Wertlinger in Austria as the kind of go-to, easy-drinking, reasonably priced white wines. In that kind of sort of 15 to 25 category. So not too cheap, but, you know, really nicely and well made and well put together. And this is, you know, I think annoyed a lot of people in Germany, because Albariño, if you just look at that name, that means Alba, white, Rino of the Rhine. And basically what happened really is that about 500-600 years ago, or nearly 1,000 years ago now at this stage, a lot of monks and monastic orders that were making wine using Riesling in Germany headed out with their clients, shall we say, with their believers on huge huge crusades and huge visitations to important sites within the Christian sort of world. And Santiago de Compostela is one of those sites that you visit and get a few years knocked off going to heaven. So you get a few years knocked off that little journey for yourself. So they charge this, and sort of the Camino, very famous journey that comes from from southern France and comes across Spain to Santiago de Compostela, was guarded by and operated by a lot of Cistercian monks, some of them coming from Germany. They brought their wine with them, why not? And they planted vines all the way along. And this this vine got planted in the west, the extreme west on the Atlantic coast of Spain, and grew up. It changed and mutated as well. And the Albariño is this very sophisticated sort of Riesling-like wine. And in the top Albariños, in the very best of them, you get this very sophisticated sort of smoothness and richness and generosity. In the plainer Albariños, you get a very linear, clinical and acidic streak to it. But this one in particular, it has more than most in that it has 22% from a grape called Caíno and 8% from Larrario, and along with the Albariño itself. And this gives it this kind of sort of luscious, buttery generosity that you don't get in a lot of Albariños at all. And it has this kind of tinge of lime to it, which I always like to think of as this kind of lime marmalade tinge. Rather than kind of the fruit itself, it's more like the jam or marmalade that we might be knowing, and you get that flavour, that taste out of it. Works very well when you're having it with something. Actually, works very well with lamb or goose, with things that are kind of fleshy and a little opulent, a little juicy, a little over fatty, and it cuts through that fat. As well as giving you this sort of warm, luscious generosity from these second and third grapes in it. So a really smashing wine, from independents all over the country for around about $24.95.
You paint a beautiful picture, Tomás. You paint an absolutely beautiful picture. That is gorgeous. I have found with a few of the Albarinos that I'm probably drinking the cheaper ones. I've been less impressed, and I always found them slightly sweet.
I would totally agree. I think Jean would probably say we're in the same sort of quadrant there for those ones as your lower order Rieslings, where the actual basically to get sweet wine, what you want to do is not have too much conversion of alcohol over into or conversion of sugar into alcohol. So basically, to get alcohol in wine, you convert the yeast, converts the sugar that's in there into alcohol. If you have no sugar at the end of your alcoholic fermentation, you have a big, huge, strong wine, sort of a Shiraz or something like that. Whereas if you're from some cooler nation that has a ton of sugar and the yeast just can't burn its way through it, you get left with a high residual sugar content and you get this feeling that you're dealing with a sweet wine. So, Tom, I would say, have a look at this slightly, a 24 euro, a 25 euro Albarino, and you get this kind of, you get the second act in this wine.
I like this. This sounds very intriguing. I like second acts. Thank you very much for that, Tomás. We have one more wine, two more wines and a film to go. I'll just give you a few more of our Pudgy Moosby hashtag today. Sauce Code, Dr. No Added Sugar, Hidden Figure, The Seven Deadly Chins, I like that one. The Never-Ending Stomach, Deep-Fried Impact, The Fat and the Furious.
That's okay as well.
A pack of crisps now. And on that 53106 for your text, we will have more for you after this. You're very welcome back. Tom Dunn sitting in for Sean today. 53106 for your texts on Twitter at Tom Happens. And if you want to email the show, afternoonnewstalk.com. A listener says the kids have me driven spare. I'm only allowing myself wine at the weekends or else I'll be drinking it heavily every night. So tonight's going to be very special, I can tell you. That first Lidl wine sounded exactly like what I need in my life. What was that name again? Well, Jean, you're about to give us your second wine. So what was the first one called again?
It's just simply called Pinot Gris, Gisborne, New Zealand, 2019. So literally the wine was made, the grapes were harvested in February and they're here now today. It's $8.99. And again, it's part of the core range, which means it's always going to be there in Lidl. And yes, it's actually a very drinkable wine. Lovely, lovely, soft fruit, you know, very tropical. And yeah, if that's your wine for the weekend, go for it. It's only $8.99, great price.
Wonderful. Your second one is going to be what exactly?
My second one is a red wine from Bordeaux, from the Saint-Emilion region, which is on the right bank of the Gironde. Now, this one is also part of the Lidl core range. In other words, from time to time, they bring in wines that are just, you know, for sale, like on a special basis, you know, either a theme, they're either French or Italian or Spanish. And they're there for a couple of months, and when they're gone, they're gone. But these ones are there all the time, all year round. And so this is the 2017 Saint-Emilion Grand Cru. It's $14.99. Now, Saint-Emilion is a beautiful medieval town on the east bank of the Gironde. It's renowned for its beautiful buildings, its scenery. I mean, I've been there a few times. It's beautiful. It's just the most wonderful place. The town has this wonderful steep, narrow cobbled streets and a big Romanesque church in the middle of the town. And it's like stepping back 1,000 years in time. Merlot is the king here. On the right bank of the Gironde, most of the wines tend to be Merlot dominated. In other words, on the left bank in the Medoc and the Haut-Médoc, everything is more Cabernet Sauvignon based, but on the right bank, Merlot is the dominant grape in the blend. Now, you've always got to remember about Bordeaux that they are blended wines, and the blend is usually made up of Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Cabernet Franc, and you get other grape varieties such as Malbec, Petit Verdoux. There could be up to 14 different grape varieties in the blend, only minuscule amounts. But on the right bank in Saint-Emilion, Merlot is king. Now, Merlot is an early ripening grape, which means that the tannins are very, very soft because it ripens so early. It doesn't have thick skin the way Cabernet Sauvignon does. So it generally produces wines that have lovely soft tannins. And for anybody who doesn't like wines that are too tannic, and tannin is that drying mouth feeling like drinking cold tea that you get around your teeth. When you taste a tannic wine, you really know you have it. And the one thing about wines from Saint-Emilion is that they don't tend to be too tannic. Now, this actually was a gold medal winner at the 2019 Berliner Wine Trophy competition. And actually, I was one of the judges at that. There was about 130 of us from all over the world, and we judged 4,000 wines. We judged them blind, which means we've no idea what we're tasting. Wow. But it's a very reputable competition. And this wine won a gold medal at the Berliner Wine Trophy, which is a good thing. Now, as I said, 2017 wasn't a terrific vintage. They had dreadful frost. It destroyed an awful lot of the vineyards. But those who managed to get through the frost scenario, and by the time they got to harvest, actually some of the wines were quite good. Now, younger Saint-Emilion wines, of which this is a 2017, so it's only 3 years old, they tend to have a lot more fruit. So you can serve them with poultry. So for example, you're going to do turkey this Easter. I mean, most people do lamb, but there are a lot of people who like to do turkey. Well, this will go with it. It'll be fine. The thing about tasting it, the plum fruit, one of the characteristics of the Merlot grape is plum fruit. Spices, again, somebody asking for spicy wine, this has lovely kind of clove spice coming through. This is going to be great with leg of lamb. I mean, anybody who's going to do the whole full metal leg of lamb with the roast garlic, with the rosemary, garlic, roast potatoes, broccoli or beans or whatever veg you want with it, this is just made to go.
That's
with
your
it.
Boy.
Or, if you prefer, you can do a selection of mature cheeses, and instead of having pudding or dessert, at the end you can get some aged Comte or some Irish cheddar, anything with the age and a bit of sweetness in it, and this will be lovely with it. It's again, spicy aromas of cloves.
Sounds beautiful.
Mocha, lovely. $14.99, Lidl Saint-Emilion Grand Cru.
Great stuff. Jean, thank you very much for that. And let's take our second clip. This is from Trolls World Tour, I think it's called. Take a listen to this.
Ahem, Branchifer. What is this?
Oh, it's nothing. Nothing. That's just my man stuff.
I love man stuff. Weapons? Oh, for shame.
Well,
violence never solves a problem, Branch.
I'm not saying we have to use them. I'm just saying it's better to be prepared in case we need them.
We won't need them unless these pointy sticks help you listen, or these rocks help you put yourself in someone else's shoes. And what about these? Is this some kind of jewelry? Oh, it's actually kind of cool looking.
Give me that. We don't even know what's out there. Wait, no. Oh, man. By the way, I whittled those for hours.
Branch, the only weapons we need are this guy and this guy. For hugs.
We can make whatever lists we want in the house, Esther, but this is the film we'll be watching over the weekend. So am I going to enjoy this?
Well, I suppose what I would politely say, Tom, is it's not for you.
That's not the point.
I didn't think much of this at all, I have to say. But it's not for me, and it's for your 5-year-old kids who want to sing along, because this is kind of a sing-along Trolls movie. And it was inevitable that we were going to get a sequel, because the last Trolls film made hundreds of millions at the box office. It was a massive hit. So we've got Anna Kendrick and Justin Timberlake back again as the two lead characters. But they discover, they think they're part of the only trolls in the world, but they discover that it's actually six different groups of troll tribes scattered around different parts. So they find out this through the arrival of a group led by Queen Barb. She's a hard rock fanatic who is determined that her music shall rule the roost over all the others. So that's the plan. So the stage is set for kind of a trolls dance off, really, and sing off, including every different group of the six trolls have a favorite type of music, including funk, techno, country, classical, So they're having a big song competition, basically. That's what you're going to be doing this weekend. There's stuff like Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
I find the Trolls movies lovely.
And Barracuda is in there. You know, there's lots of well-known songs. It's not as fun as the first one. It doesn't, you know, it's hardly a movie at all. Let's face it, it's a musical jukebox. It's got that lovely glittery, colourful energy and animation that featured in the first film as well. I've been getting asked a lot about what movies are streaming where, and I found thanks to pals on Twitter, I found a really good streaming search engine, because I've been putting up a movie a day on Twitter to get people through this nightmare. And but justwatch.com and do a search under Ireland. It'll show you what streamers are showing what movie.
Okay, great.
And you know who's showing them for free, who's charging what. Prices differ quite considerably, which I didn't realise before. But this one is, because it's a brand new title, you'll only get this to rent on a number of platforms for $17.99, which I actually think is a bit too expensive.
Yeah, to rent. I'd want to own it for that price now.
Yes, I think
thanks
so.
Thanks for justwatch.com for that. That's great.
And do a search under Ireland.
Okay. Tomás, before we get your second wine, I have a question for you. A listener says, seeing as we only drink with friends over the internet now, I've decided to mix things up a bit and invest in some really great wine glasses. Could Tomás suggest some stellar glasses that I can wow with and make the lone drinking experience a bit more enjoyable?
There's many, many glasses. Alto are very good. There's new glasses from Jancis Robinson, who's a terrific wine critic in the UK. She writes for the Financial Times, and she now has her own set of glasses, which are really excellent. And then the kingmaker of them all is Riedel. And Riedel glasses, you can get them by grape variety. So you're not just looking at your Chianti glass or your red wine from Italy. You're getting right down to Sangiovese, the actual grape itself. And you can be looking at different types of grapes in the way that they enhance the actual flavours. And they work very well. And they're very large. So they should show off well on your video, on your Zoom, and on your WhatsApp sort of communication. Great. So that could work well.
So pick your favourite wine and match the glass to it.
Yeah,
Jean?
I'm using my Riedel glass, my Bordeaux glass for the Sant'Emilion, which I just tweeted. So you could see it's specifically made for Bordeaux, and it really makes the wine taste fantastic.
Second wine.
You're going to tell us about your second wine,
It's Rioja, or it's from Rioja, and it's Lady Herminia, and you get that in all the independents. You get it in Ardkeen down in Waterford. You get it in Mitchell & Sons, and in Mitchell & Sons, in fact, they have a terrific offer, which is that it's 2 for $25 at the moment, so that's about $12.50 a bottle, even with my bad mathematics. That makes it a pretty fascinating wine. It's very, very rich. It's trying to bring this kind of new wave Rioja to the fore. The older Riojas tended to want you to have a very mature wine in your glass when you bought it from them. So they used to age it for donkey's years before giving it out. This is aged for 4 or 5 months in bottle, 4 or 5 months in glass, in barrel and so forth. So a lot less aging there, though the barrel is enough to give it this kind of luxury hint of a little bit of coconut and a little a little edge at the back of dark fruit and of these drowning maraschino cherries. It works. It's a wine that would go well with chocolate. Actually, this weekend, it a little bit of this would go very, very nicely with it. If I could just jump in and say that all the independent shops are out there. You can ring them up in advance. You tell them what you want, give them your card, and when you turn up at the front door, they will come out to your car, leave it into your boot, wipe the back of the thing in a COVID happy manner, and allow you to walk away in a HSE compliant and social distancing compliant manner for eating. One of those is Terroirs in Donnybrook, and they're running a Dragon's Easter Egg auction for frontline workers. in the Mater Hospital, and if you go to their website, you can partake in their auction. Oh, I'd say it has now passed me out a little bit. Their 3 foot high egg, which is made by Eric van der Wieken, is now at running at 1600, so it's a little higher than taste would want. So the Lady Herminia at 2 for 25, or around about sort of €15 a bottle, a super wine for this weekend.
Great. Tomás, thank you very much for that. And Jean and Esther, thank you all. Lovely to talk to you. The first humans I've talked to that I'm not either married to or have brought into the world in quite some time. So lovely to talk to you all today.
Oh, likewise, Tom.
And you too,
honored,
Tom.
Honored.
Thank you very much. The hashtag today was Pudgy Movies. I'll leave you a few of those. Cakes on a Plane, Beauty and the Obese, Oh Blubber, Where Art Thou, Any Given Sunday, The Movies, and Educating Rye Vita. Very high standard. Thank you very much indeed for that. That is it for Movies and Booze this week. But thanks to Esther McCarthy, Gene Smullen, and Tomás Clancy as always. Thanks to the team from the show together, Aisling O'Reilly, Simon Tierney, and Claire Collins. Philip Kelly was on sound. Ivan's up next in The Hard Shoulder. Have a great Easter bank holiday weekend.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.